we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
And the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to Animal Voices, Western Canada's only radio program dedicated to animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM, Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, unceded Coast Salish territories. Today is Friday, March 30th, 2018. I'm your host, Elise Jacobson, and I'm joined here in the studio today by my co-host, Denise Swanson.
Happy long weekend.
And our control room operator, Allison Cole.
Hi there.
Welcome, everyone. This coming Sunday, April 1st, is Easter Sunday, and many people across Canada will be celebrating in various ways with their families. In about 10 minutes, we'll be discussing some of the problematic ways in which non-human animals are used at Easter time and sharing tips for how to have a compassionate and joyful Easter for those who celebrate. April 2nd, this coming Monday, happens to be National Ferret Day. Our featured guest today will be Lisa Galarno, intake director for the Ferret Rescue Society of Ottawa. She'll be sharing interesting ferret facts with us, as well as information on adopting ferrets and the rescue work her organization does. So that's coming up in just over half an hour, so stay tuned. But first, Allison, you had some thoughts to share with us.
Yeah, I actually wanted to share a story that's been lagging on my mind now for, I would say, it's been almost 2 years. This incident happened to me at work. And it's something that I thought, well, I need to tell this story on the show because it's important and it's not getting out there. And now, actually, it is getting out there because I was opening my mail this week, and the Vancouver Humane Society has this issue on their front page. So I took this as a sign. I said, okay, I'm going to share my story. So this happened a few summers ago at my work. It was one of our nearby buildings at my work was going into renovations. And so we had this big storage container next to my building where I work, which people use as a community center. And there's always people running in and out and using it for all kinds of activities. But also my office area is there where I work. And anyways, we had... It was in the summer, and people were leaving the doors open all the time for their activities, I guess because it was hot. And we just had this influx of mice that had decided to make our building their home. These cute little mice.
Aww.
But however, they were terrorizing my coworkers. And I don't work at this location very often, but I suddenly started to have these shifts here. And I got to work realizing that we had this, like, that mice were taking over our building. We had this big revolution of mice. And I went into this situation, like most people, like not, like, I was scared of mice. And if you remember, I used to be scared of rats until we had the rat appreciation show last year, and we brought in our rat, and I got over my fear of rats.
Aww.
Because I want to recognize that they are sweet creatures. They're sentient beings. And if you see all those cute rat and mice videos online, you would know that too, which is why I keep posting them, because mice and rats, they get a bad rap, right?
Absolutely.
So this is the story that I wanted to tell. Is I was getting to work on my midnight shift, and my coworker before me, she was so distressed about the mice, and the coworkers before her, they would always lay out these glue traps. And are you both familiar with what glue traps are?
Only too familiar.
Yeah.
Right. So glue traps, in case you're not familiar, they're these like flat, sticky traps. Like it could be like a piece of paper with extremely sticky substance on them.
Mm-hmm.
And mice are actually really small creatures. So as soon as they step on that trap, their feet get stuck, and they cannot for the life of them unstuck it. Like they can't get it unstuck. That's it. Yeah. They're done. So the BCSPCA actually has recommended that these do not be used by just the average homeowners. Like average consumers are not supposed to be using these, because the only way to deal with the mice after they get stuck is to humanely kill them.
Wow.
And because you can't just throw it in the bush and hope that they get unstuck. They
right.
won't. being, you know, animal rights person here, and this is like, this has come up in the past, I've looked up ways how to release these mice. So I know that they can supposedly be released if you put some like cooking oil on their feet.
Right.
And I've heard of stories where mice have been successfully released in that way.
That's good to know.
I've heard of that too.
Yeah, it's good to know. So I hope that that little nugget of information would serve me during this work shift I had. So I got to work. There were dozens and dozens of all these mice traps laid out, and I was so mad, and I was just like, I just couldn't even believe, like, I'm like, to my coworker, like, what are you doing? She's like, oh, I just don't want them here. Anyways, okay, I'm like, okay, I don't have time for your lack of compassion right now. It's my shift and getting rid of all these. So I went and I picked them all up, and I was doing that for a couple nights. And then, because I only worked there a few days, but the second night, I thought I had picked them all up. And then a couple hours later, I went into the room where most of them were, where they were running into, because the people kept leaving the doors open. And
that's the primary way it was that mice and rats get in, by the way. So don't leave your doors open
warmth.
Or get a screen. Yeah.
And maybe it was like their birthing season. Like, who wouldn't want a big, warm building, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not their fault. And unfortunately, I found a little mouse who had been trapped. Oh. I was devastated. I just thinking back to it now, like, it really...
Yeah.
Like, maybe that's why I haven't brought it up for so long, because it's this horrible memory that's still launched in the back of my brain.
Right.
Because, anyways, so I did what I could. I was afraid of the mouse. So I conjured some help from my other coworker who was working across campus in the middle of the night, who also has a heart, and he's vegan now too, by the way.
Oh, nice.
And he came over to help me with the mouse, and we got some oil, and we were trying. He was really doing most of the work, and we got it released. And it was not easy. It's not an easy thing. So don't think I can easily trap these mice, and then I can easily release them with some oil and then get them in the woods. That's not going to happen. There are more humane traps that you can use that capture the mice, and then you can actually relocate them. Our building is across the street from a forest, so that's obviously the better place for them. So anyways, I took some pictures of this mouse and some videos and that I had wanted to share, like, on social media, because it's always like an opportunity to educate others. And maybe I will do that. I'll have to look back in my archives, because it was quite a while ago. And we released the mouse, and then the poor mouse was covered in oil. So he was like, you know, like when your dog looks like a drowned rat?
Yeah.
Oh, he looked like a drowned mouse.
Aww.
Poor thing.
Yeah.
And anyways, and so he was just still. He wasn't doing anything. But I will tell you, like, when he was just stuck on there, like, I was looking into his eyes. Mm. I was taking some beautiful photos of him. Like, his face was beautiful. I was appreciating this beautiful sentient being that I wish that more people could appreciate.
Right.
Because they're nothing to be afraid of, actually. It's just a misunderstanding between species.
Were you able to get the oil off of him?
So we released him, and of course, like I said, there was a lot of oil that unfortunately got on him, because he's little, right? And he was like kind of moving in that, but then he just stopped moving. And so we put him in this little garbage container, and then my coworker left, and I kept going back to keep an eye on him to see how he was doing. But it turned out, after a while, he was just stiff. He had died of shock.
Oh.
And that's why this is a sad story.
Yeah.
And I was so particularly upset because this happened on my shift.
Yeah, of course.
And it was my fault, because I hadn't removed all of the traps except for this one. Like, there were so many. Anyways, all I did from it was, like, I know at my work there's this culture that it's okay to put out these traps, because we have a lot of rodent issues. And I printed out one of those pictures, the little mouse, who I named Freddy.
Aww.
I put it in our logbook, and I said, this is Freddy. I said, this is what happened to him. Let's please show some compassion and stop using these
cruel
traps.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I could do. And like I said, I don't work there very much, so I don't know. Like, I don't have a lot of contact with those coworkers, and I kind of feel like that's all I could do. Anyways, what I quickly wanted to say is Vancouver Humane Society is now putting a call out to urge four of Canada's biggest retailers to stop selling these cruel traps. And those retailers are Walmart, Rona, Canadian Tire, and the Home Depot.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll put a link on our Facebook page page today. I'll do that, or tomorrow you can check on there to find more information about that. And on our website will also be an info sheet from the BC SPCA that talks more about keeping control of rats and mice out of your areas, and about using glue traps and more humane traps.
Right.
So
great.
That's my story for today.
Well, thank you so much for sharing, Allison. That's definitely food for thought. So Denise, you have some news for us.
I have some news. First of all, four cities in Brazil have pledged to transition all of the meals served at its public school cafeterias to 100% plant-based by the end of 2019, with the mission of reducing the city's environmental footprint, especially water consumption, aiding local produce farmers, and fostering humane and healthy eating habits for students. The cities in the northeastern state of Bahia will soon be home to the world's first school districts to make such a commitment, program organizers tooted. The Escola Sustentável, Sustainable School Project, spearheaded by Humane Society International in Brazil, and the local public prosecutor office, covers 30,000 students and will impact more than 23 million meals a year. It will reduce meat, dairy, and egg consumption by an estimated 25% per semester. Program organizers noted that half of Brazil's population is overweight or obese, including one in three children between the ages of 5 and 9. Cutting down on animal-based proteins and increasing the intake of fruits, vegetables, legumes, and whole grains has known health benefits, from lowering cholesterol and blood pressure to reducing risks of heart disease, diabetes, and cancer. Definitive implementation of the program will depend on health outcomes of the students after the trial period, according to Brazilian publication Correio. Students will undergo periodic tests that count blood ferritin, vitamin B12, total cholesterol, triglycerides, and blood glucose levels. Weight, height, and body composition will also be measured. Families who don't agree with the newly imposed diet can send their students to school with packed lunches.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, that's so great that they're implementing that. That'll be a great change.
And in other news, this is from Veg News. A new study published this week in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences found that if all animal-based food production in the United States were replaced by nutritionally equivalent plant-based crops, the country could feed an additional 350 million people, which is more than the total United States population. Researchers examined food waste, which is often quantified only in weight, by taking into consideration the environmental resources that are used to produce certain wasted foods, a system of measurement they called opportunity food loss. The study compared the amount of resources used to produce animal-based foods in five categories: beef, pork, poultry, dairy, and eggs, to those used for nutritionally equivalent plant-based foods, and found that the latter could produce up to 20 times more protein per acre. In terms of beef, researchers found that the land area used to produce 4 grams of edible protein would yield 100 grams of the protein if used to grow a mix of soy, potatoes, cane sugar, peanuts, and garlic, an opportunity food loss of 96 grams or 96% per unit of land. The other 4 categories of animal-based food also yielded high opportunity food losses: 90% for pork, 75% for dairy, 50% for poultry, and 40% for eggs. Our analysis has shown that favoring a plant-based diet can potentially yield more food than eliminating all the conventionally defined causes of food loss, lead author Alain Chapon said.
Wow. Yeah, that's I've been seeing a lot about that study over the last few days, and that's a pretty big thing. It's not the first study to come to that conclusion by any means.
It's just being
so
confirmed in different ways.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's great. Very important stuff. So moving on, I just wanted to spend some time discussing the upcoming holiday, Easter. Of course, today is Good Friday for those who celebrate, and Sunday is Easter Sunday. So around this time of year, and for this holiday in particular, there's just so many ways in which animals are used by humans that it can be super problematic. I mean, we think about sort of the typical Easter Sunday dinner. It often involves a lamb, sometimes a ham roast, a pig. And then there's also the issues of, for example, people giving animals as gifts. It's quite common for people to give, you know, family members, children, rabbits as gifts or live chicks. And yeah, there's so many issues. So, I just wanted to talk a little bit about that. Do you, Denise, do you have any thoughts on some of the ways in which animals are used at Easter?
Well, I think it's a tradition, so it's done somewhat thoughtlessly. Mm-hmm. The way that people, you know, as usual, disassociate their consumption of pigs and chickens and lambs. Mm-hmm. As I used to consume all of those, and I think that I was able to do that because I was totally not thinking. I was disconnecting from the fact that these are animals that mm-hmm. I respect and feel are deserving of their lives.
Right. Yeah, me too. Me too. I think we all have that thought that way in our past, absolutely. I'm always surprised, you know, I don't think I personally know anyone who does this, but apparently it is quite common, again, for people to give animals as gifts, such as, you know, baby rabbits and baby chicks, which is crazy. Allison, you just sent us a video the other day about how people will sometimes dye the feathers of baby chicks. They dye them bright colors.
To sell them for Easter.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that happens mostly in the States. I've never seen that happen here before, but I think if that video was showing that, it's a pretty big thing. Like, maybe we can post it on our Facebook. It's quite astronomical to see, like, these, like tens and tens of dozens and dozens of baby chicks being dyed, like, green and blue and yellow and pink. And baby chicks are just the sweetest, most innocent creatures. I've had experiences with many. And they don't know anything. They're only a day or two old.
Right.
But the fact is that the baby lambs, same thing, right? Mm-hmm. Who people, it astounds me that people still actually eat them. I was at Costco, I think last year, maybe it was around this time of the year, or some kind of holiday time where people also consume lambs. And I accidentally walked through the meat aisle, and there were lambs, like, encased in styrofoam and plastic.
Yeah.
And that was shocking to me.
Pieces of lamb, I assume.
Said, yes. People would actually purchase those and eat them. And that's why whenever I see around this time of the year cute baby lamb photos and videos on my Facebook, I repost them because I want anyone to see them. I know there's people out there that eat this. Like, most of, you know, I'm in my closed vegan circle here where I don't really associate, but I do, you know, maybe my workplace isn't that. People are eating their lambs, and I don't understand why people, what compels people to do that. I guess you said tradition, right? And pigs as well. Pigs are the sweetest creatures, and they all are. I mean, that's like the whole holiday of Easter as I see it. We were talking earlier this week, like, we don't really celebrate Easter. Mm-hmm. Easter is actually a religious holiday, right? That goes back thousands and thousands of years.
Yeah.
But what it's come to be now is a celebration, what I see it as a vegan, it's a celebration of exploitation of others, as many holidays are, right? Mm-hmm. Not just Easter.
Yeah. So
Easter is one of the biggest ones.
Yeah, tradition is obviously one of the things, but also there is a certain degree of a lack of information. Like, you just mentioned the 1 or 2 day old baby chicks, the ones that are being dyed. And then look at all the other billions of baby chicks that don't live to the age of two because they're thrown live into macerators.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because they're males, not females, and can't lay eggs.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm sure that if people thought of that, you know, they'd think twice about eating these things because all eggs, not just conventional ones, come from hatcheries that do these practices.
Exactly.
If they're not suffocating them, they're throwing them live into grinders.
Yeah.
Like, how can we put up with this?
Absolutely.
Okay, I'm going to share another horrific picture of lambs being tied up before they get slaughtered. I can't help it.
Oh,
on
no.
our Facebook page. Because it's because people need to know.
Yeah, absolutely.
We need to get this message out there. Otherwise, they are shutting it out of their minds or using their cognitive dissonance to compartmentalize one little happy part of their life where, oh, they're enjoying dinner with their family and who knows what we're eating. We're not really thinking about it. To the other part, which is the reality, which is these are baby animals mm-hmm. who are suffering, who don't want to die. None of them want to die. None of them want to be separated from their mothers. And actually, yeah. they shouldn't even be brought into the world because they're only being brought into the world for breeding purposes so that people can eat them at Easter.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and just think of them as your own baby human. They're really, a baby is a baby is a baby.
Right, of course, yeah. I mean, going back to what you said about eggs, Denise, I think even that is relevant for Easter because people buy a lot of eggs and, you know, blow the inside out of them to paint them or dye right. them or whatever. And yeah, so there's just all kinds of different things that I think, again, most people just don't think about. I certainly didn't think about all of it growing up. Yeah, so let's see, I kind of lost my thought. Going back to giving the animals as pets, I think it's, you know, I don't think I know anyone who does this, thankfully, but it seems like it's a common practice around the world. And, I mean, Easter, it's sort of a funny holiday. I think like a lot of holidays that are celebrated in the West, it is a Christian holiday, but it has incorporated some pagan traditions as well. Like the rabbits and the chicks and the eggs and everything are fertility symbols, right? And the lamb, even the fact that people slaughter lambs. So commonly lambs are born in the spring. And so this is all about kind of springtime and these fertility rites and that kind of thing. And but I feel like there's so many other ways to kind of, you know, if you want to celebrate springtime and new beginnings, new growth, there's all kinds of ways to do that without actually hurting animals or exploiting animals. You can even, you know, use their imagery if you want, but just, you know, not harm them. It shouldn't be too hard. But yeah, I think that people need to think carefully when giving animals as pets or buying animals as pets, you know, about the amount of commitment that it's going to take. You know, I think people sometimes see a fluffy little animal, fluffy little baby rabbit or a baby chick, and they think, oh, they're so cute, I can just hold them and pet them and, you know, whatever. But these animals can live for 10 years. You know, chickens and rabbits both can live for 10 years. And so if you buy one or adopt one or whatever, you're making that commitment to take care of them for that long. And so I think it's incredibly important to be thinking about that and not think of it as just a temporary thing that you can play with, but, you know, it's
and
it's
think of it from, yeah, the point of view of the animal itself is
right.
not a thing at all, right?
Exactly. Yeah, it's not a toy. Absolutely. So I also wanted to talk about some strategies for having a more compassionate Easter, you know, things that people can do if they want to be kinder to animals around this time of year. And there's, of course, you know, if you want to sort of maintain some of those family traditions, you know, have some of those traditional tastes at your Easter dinner and that sort of thing, there's all kinds of ways to do that using plant-based foods. We were talking earlier about, Denise, you found a link on Good Housekeeping this year.
That's right.
Of Easter recipes, right?
Yeah, if you want to be inspired by photos, yeah, if you Google...
Can we share it on our Facebook to make it easy?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay, absolutely. I want to see that.
Yeah, just Google vegan Easter recipes. It's the first thing that comes up. It's mm-hmm. a good housekeeping.
I'll look for it right now.
Article.
Yeah, I looked at it the other day, and the photography was definitely very nice. And yeah, of course, if you Google vegan Easter recipes, you know, a million things come up. There's lots of different roasts that you can make that are plant based. There's one that I really like, just sort of a general holiday roast on the on Isa Chandra's website. It used to be called Post Punk Kitchen. And it's a seitan roast. Seitan, for those who don't know, is wheat gluten and or sometimes called wheat meat because it's got a very meaty texture. And it's stuffed with shiitake mushrooms and leeks, and it's delicious. I've made it
sounds
before.
Sounds good.
Yeah, so it would be a beautiful thing to make for Easter dinner or, you know, anything. And yeah, there's just like all kinds of things you can do.
Well, there's a tofurkey Easter ham now. I tried it.
Yeah.
I tried it at some show I was at recently. I had just like a little morsel of it just to see, because it doesn't really look appealing to me, because I didn't really ever grow up eating pigs. We stopped doing that when I was a child, so it's not something that I really see as an edible food.
Yeah.
But it tastes for real, man. Like it's
wow.
like if you want your Easter ham, Get a tofurkey ham instead.
Yeah, sure. And you don't have to eat slabs of it if you don't want to. You can mince it and put it in a quiche or something. Make a quiche Lorraine.
I think I saw it at Whole Foods. And probably Vegan Supply has it, too. And if you're in the States, it's probably more widely available.
Yeah, so yeah. I've seen it at a few places in Vancouver, actually. It's stuff, you can definitely buy it. Yeah, and what you said about quiche, that's a good idea. You can make quiches out of soft tofu and that sort of thing.
And you can also go to a little store called Veggie Favor. It's on Cambie at, I think, 18th?
Yeah, around there.
They have all kinds of those veggie meats you can use in recipes.
Yeah, and so does Vegan Supply here in Vancouver and Chinatown. And actually, if you're anywhere in Canada, they ship all over Canada. So you can order stuff online at vegansupply.ca. And even with... I wanted to talk a little bit about chocolate, too. People give a lot of chocolate at this time of year, and it's mostly milk chocolate. Obviously, we've talked about dairy a lot on this show. There's incredible cruelty involved in dairy farming. And even I remember doing a show a while back about... chocolate, and there's a lot of problems with slavery in the chocolate industry too. You know, obviously human rights and animal rights issues are interconnected, so we want to be thinking about that. But thankfully there are companies that make vegan Easter chocolate, fair trade chocolate. You can buy chocolate bunnies and chocolate eggs, you know, little cream eggs and stuff with the colorful wrappers. Again, Vegan Supply in Vancouver has a lot of those. Our vegan shoe store, Nice Shoes, they sell a bunch of vegan Easter chocolate, which is cool. You can get the chocolate bunnies and eggs and stuff there. All of these, both of these businesses ship across Canada and I think across the U.S. as well. And there's other, if you are in the U.S. or elsewhere in the world, there's other stores and other places online where you can buy Easter chocolate.
I was at Vegan Supply about a month ago, and they already had Easter chocolate peanut butter filled Sajax eggs.
Oh.
And I grabbed them. So because they always sell out early, and those things are amazing. My sister got me some last year and from Nice Shoes, I think.
Wow.
And anyways, I bought some as gifts for people and of course a gift for myself.
And
if you need it wasn't Easter yet, but
can't go wrong with chocolate and peanut butter.
If you need just plain chocolate for your recipes or whatever, you can always buy Coco Camino fair trade chocolate. That's available in lots of places.
Yes. Yeah, and that's awesome chocolate. Yeah, and it is free of slavery as well, which is great.
On the farm every Friday, on the farm it's rabbit pie day, so every Friday that ever comes along, I get up early and sing this little song. Run, rabbit, run, rabbit, run, run, run. Run, rabbit, run, rabbit, run, run, run. Bang, 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 bang goes the farmer's gun. Run, rabbit, run, rabbit, run, 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 run. Run, rabbit, run, rabbit, run, run, run. Don't give the farmer his fun, fun, fun. He'll get by without his rabbit pie. So run, rabbit, run, rabbit, run. Run, rabbit,
run, rabbit, run, 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 rabbit, run, rabbit, run, run, run. Don't give the farmer his fun, fun, fun. He'll get by without his rabbit pie. So run, rabbit.
You're listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM CFRO, Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, unceded Coast Salish territories.
And now for some events. Two related events, next Friday evening, April 6th, and Saturday afternoon, April 7th, international activist Danny Rukin will be joining forces with local groups. Friday, April 6th at 6 p.m., there is a potluck and chat with Danny. Please bring vegan food. And if you're unable to, come anyway. Then on Saturday, April 7th, from 3 o'clock to 4:30 downtown, Danny will be with Direct Action Everywhere for a nonviolent disruption inside an establishment where animals are being bought and sold and eaten. The action, which involves adhering a small paper sign to a surface with scotch tape, is called Post the Truth. Attention, animals' lives are their right. Killing them is violent and unjust, no matter how it is done. A designated activist will lead some basic chants as the group leaves the venue, where they will likely spend under 10 minutes. A debriefing will follow. All levels of experience, including none, are welcomed. Those not sure of their comfort level at protests can simply stand quietly holding a sign. Please meet at the City Center SkyTrain, Granville in West Georgia at 3 p.m. For more details and potluck information, go to the Animal Voices Vancouver Facebook page. And an event on Friday, April 20th, hosted by the Animal Defense and Anti-Vivisection Society and Stop UBC Animal Research, is called Beyond Animal Testing, New Approaches in Medical Research, an evening with Charu. Tour the lovely Van Dusen Gardens at your leisure for the entire day. Enjoy a scrumptious all-vegan get-together starting at 6 p.m. and then be inspired by Dr. Chandra Sekera's presentation at 7 p.m. Tickets are $21.51 through Eventbrite. Again, that's Friday, April 20th at Van Dusen Botanical Garden, 5251 Oak Street, Vancouver. On Saturday, April 14th, Vancouver Island Vegan Association and Liberation BC are hosting Animal Advocacy Camp 2018 for the first time on Vancouver Island in Victoria, BC. The event will feature six speakers from a variety of fields in animal advocacy, from activists to authors, academics to politicians. For more info on the speakers, go to the website at www.animaladvocacycamp.com. For carpooling from Vancouver, please see links on the Animal Advocacy Camp 2018 Facebook page. This will be a full-day event from 10 to 5 with a lunch break catered by local vegan eatery Green Cuisine. The event will be held in the Gibson Auditorium at Camosun College Lansdowne Campus, located in the Young Building, room 219. The building is wheelchair accessible. A map is provided on Eventbrite. Tickets are $32.74, and a sliding scale is available to anyone in need.
I think we have a lot of people from Vancouver going to that this year, but you're not making it this year, Denise.
No, unfortunately. It looks like a great speaker lineup.
Yeah, for sure. So I want to say for people who can't make it in Vancouver this year, we will be resuming to our yearly Vancouver Animal Advocacy Camp starting next year again. We've been on hiatus for a bit, but I'm excited about this year's. I wish I could go. If someone wants to go with me, let me know. Maybe we can plan it. It's coming up in a couple of weeks. Totally worth the money and everything.
Cool. And next weekend, we also have Seattle Veg Fest.
But we will be going to that.
We will be going to. That is April 7th and 8th. Allison, do you know any more of the details about the Seattle Veg Fest?
I know two details.
Okay.
It's April 7th and 8th, and it's from 10 till 5. And I also know that there's like 500 different food samples that you can eat that are vegan. So that's why we go every year. Yeah. And there is a small cost for it as well. I don't know what it's gone up to this year.
It's
but
very reasonable.
Yeah, bring like $10 of American cash or something, and then be ready to have a feast. And there's lots of speakers and cooking demos and all that. that as well.
So. And it's at Seattle Center.
Seattle Center, yeah, and just a short 2.5-hour drive. Awesome. Down.
So remember, as always, if you have an animal-related event that you'd like us to share on the show, email it to us at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com.
Listen to the World Poetry Cafe every Tuesday night, 9 to 10 p.m. Your favorite multilingual intercultural show featuring poetry, music, writing, and film from Canada and around the world. The World Poetry Cafe, 9 to 10 p.m. Tuesday on Vancouver Cooperative Radio.
Our featured guest today is Lisa Galarno, Intake Director at the Ferret Rescue Society of Ottawa. Hello, Lisa, and welcome to Animal Voices.
Hi, thanks a lot for having me.
So first of all, can you tell us a bit about the Ferret Rescue Society of Ottawa and the work that you do?
Sure. The Ferret Rescue Society of Ottawa was officially incorporated as a not-for-profit in 2002, but we're building on a tradition of volunteers who started this work well before we did. We are the only ferret rescue in the Ottawa area and one of only two registered in Ontario, so ferret rescues are a little bit few and far between on the ground in Canada.
Absolutely. And how many ferrets do you have in your care?
Currently we have 43 in our care. It will be 44 by the end of the weekend. We've just had a request for a new surrender, and he will be joining us shortly.
Wow.
What we do with these little guys is we focus first on rescue, obviously. We also work with rehabilitation. So if we have animals with health issues or with behavioral issues that make them unadoptable, we try to help work them through that so we can get them into the adoption process, if it's at all possible. And then we also focus on public education. So we really appreciate this opportunity with you today.
Great. Well, I'm wondering, too, how most of these ferrets end up in your care. Do you rescue any of them from the wild, or are they all domesticated ferrets?
The ferret has actually been a domesticated species for about 2,000 years. So there are no wild ferrets anymore in terms of the specific ferret species that we consider to be a pet.
Mm-hmm.
There is the European polecat, who is a very close genetic relative, and in fact the wild animal that our current domestic ferrets are descended from. They're still a close enough genetic relative that they can interbreed, but the pet ferrets that you see today are all bred in captivity, sold as pets or working animals, so they come into our care either as a result of a personal surrender, a family who are no longer able to care for the animal or who have lost interest in the animal, sadly. We work very closely with our local SPCA. So any ferrets surrendered there are held mandatory 72 hours so that if they are a lost pet, people have the opportunity to reclaim them. And after that, they are transferred into our care. And we also do some degree of networking with other shelters in North America. So we try to keep track of each other. And when there is an overload of ferrets or an emergency situation, we will sometimes work together to transport and share the load to make sure that all of the ferrets get an equal chance at rehabilitation and adoption into new homes.
So how did you personally get involved with ferret rescue?
Well, I got my first pet ferret about 20 years ago. Had never seen one, but was instantly smitten. And apparently I talked far too much about this little ferret. Because, one year for my birthday, my young nieces put together, you know, the ultimate Bristol board presentation and birthday present. And what they'd saved their pennies to do was to pay for the adoption of a ferret from the Ottawa Ferret Rescue. I walked in expecting to walk out with one ferret. Fell victim to ferret math, walked out with three.
Wow.
And about 3 days later, I was asked to join the board. And I have been working with them ever since. So that goes back to 2007. They don't let go of volunteers easily.
Yeah, that's amazing. So are there any interesting facts about ferrets that you can share with our listeners?
I'd love to clear up a few misconceptions about them if I could.
Absolutely.
One of the most common things we hear from people is, and you know, they get a bad rap, poor little ferrets. To begin with, they are not rodents. Most people seem to think they are. Anybody who looked closely at their little teeth, they could do, you know, Count Dracula proud. These guys are carnivores. So, not rodents, definitely a member of the carnivore family. In fact, they came to North America as mousers, so most rodents are not very fond of ferrets. They also get a really bad rap for being both smelly and vicious. Like any other pet, you know, a ferret who is badly handled, who is abused, will react with fear and with aggression. Well handled, these guys are absolutely adorable little pets, and the trick to, you know, beating the smelly rep is really just to treat them the same way you would your dog or cat. Make sure that they've got a clean litter box, that they're sleeping in clean bedding, that they have a proper diet, and suddenly they're not really such smelly little creatures. And by the way, a proper diet, once again, having spoken about the fact that they are carnivores, is a meat-based diet. So they cannot digest fruits and vegetables. Not a good thing to feed them. Causes all kinds of health issues.
I have a question for you, Lisa. This is Allison here. I'm very curious just to know, I don't know anyone who has a ferret as a companion animal, and I just learned from you that they're all domesticated. So what is it like living with a ferret? Do they get along with other companion animals? Do they really enjoy cuddling with humans? Are they clean animals? Are they funny? Are they quirky? Like, what is it like living with a ferret?
They have very individual personalities, so the answers they give you are going to be general, because some are better at some things than they are at others. For the most part, they can be litter box trained, but, you know, probably not as good as your cat, most of them. Personality-wise, a bit of a mix between a cat and a dog. They've got the independence of a cat in that you can leave them alone for 24 hours, and they've got the good sense not to gorge and eat every bit of food that you leave them in the first 5 minutes. But much like a dog, they're very interested in what you're doing. They like to be involved. They're curious. They're thinkers in terms of you know, animal behavior. They're problem solvers. They love to play games with you. I sort of consider them nature's antidepressant. It's very hard to watch a couple of ferrets playing and not, you know, laugh out loud and really be delighted by how silly that they can actually be.
Oh, I have a question. This is Denise here. I'm wondering, you said that they were something sort of between a dog and a cat in terms of being able to leave them alone. Are they more of a loner type of animal, or are they very social?
We get the occasional ferret who really does not seem to appreciate the company of other ferrets, but most of the time we will end up with groupings. So they will pick their friends amongst their shelter mates, and they will hang out as a group together. They sleep in great big fur piles together. they will play and wrestle together. They'll react much the same way most of the time with dogs and cats. So we very seldom hesitate about placing a ferret in a home with a dog or a cat. We warn cat owners to please, you know, give their poor cat a way to get away from the ferrets, because the ferrets are a lot more relentless about playing, and the cat gets bored with the whole routine much before the ferrets do. But I've actually, you know, had neighbors where I would bring ferrets over to amuse the dog during the day when the owners couldn't get out to give the dog a walk, and we'd have play dates with dogs.
Wow. bet that was quite a sight. So that when you have a ferret, you know, as a companion animal, do they kind of typically have sort of free run of the house, or do they need to sort of stay in a crate, or do you take them outside for exercise?
We ask people to make sure that they get between 2 and 4 hours outside of their cage every day for interactive play with you or with other ferrets. They actually sleep about 16 to 18 hours a day,
Which
makes them pretty easy to manage during those hours of the day. They are very much alert and on the go when they're awake, though. And they'll sort their day out around you because they hate to be left out of anything.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll learn a routine. Like if, you know, you usually get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and that's when a fresh bowl of food comes out and then they get out to play. If you wander into their room to let them out of their cage at 6:30, you've got a bunch of eager little faces pressed up against the bars.
Wow, that's amazing. So I understand that there's one species in the central United States, a relative of the domesticated ferret called the black-footed ferret, and it's endangered. Do you have any insights on what everyday people can do to help conserve this species?
The reintroduction of the black-footed ferret is actually it started back in the 90s with the first releases back into the wild. We have one release site here in Canada. It's the Saskatchewan Grasslands National Park. And they saw their first release of black-footed ferrets in October of 2009 when 34 were released back into the park. Since then, there have been an additional 75 released. We haven't reached the target population across the, I believe there are 11 release zones in North America of 3,500, which is about the level where they think they have a sustainable genetic pool and a sustainable population. So it's an ongoing effort, and if people are looking to support these types of efforts, the Toronto Zoo is the only Canadian facility that is involved in the captive breeding. There are a couple of organizations that are specifically involved in the preservation of the black-footed ferret. There's organizations like Prairie Wildlife Research or the National Black-Footed Conservation Center. Certainly donations to organizations such as those. If you happen to be living close to a site where the animals are being released, there are always a lot of really fun volunteer opportunities to actually help take part in the release or take part in the surveys of the populations where the animals are, you know, captured and tagged and monitored. So kind of a fun activity to be involved in if you're in the right place geographically.
I had no idea that there were facilities in Canada that were dealing with that. That's great. I did read something about how part of the issue is that their main diet is prairie dogs, and I guess there have been mass hunting campaigns and the prairie dogs that they eat are being wiped out, and so that's why.
Prairie dogs are being wiped out. You know, in some instances, really, because we're using land as farmland now, mm-hmm. So you know the prairie dogs are considered pests.
Right.
They're also, in addition to the lack of habitat, there's been a flea-borne disease that has particularly affected the prairie dog populations. So the prairie dogs who are there are being decimated by this disease, which can also be passed along to the ferrets. So as part of the release programs and the attempts to repopulate, there are also programs underway looking for ways to vaccinate both wild populations in order to prevent the spread of these diseases and to keep both populations healthy.
Wow. Yeah, that's good to know. So what advice do you have for people looking to adopt a ferret?
The first thing I'd say to people is do your research. You know, I think they're fabulous pets. Lots of people think they're fabulous pets, but you really need to look into what you're doing before you get one.
Mm-hmm.
Great if you have someplace near you where you can volunteer and interact with them. you know, do some of the fun stuff, play with them, you know, toss balls, tickle tummies, trim nails, but, you know, get into some of the nitty-gritty, too, and see what it's like to care for a sick ferret, to take care of their you know, sort of ongoing maintenance, clean ears, trim nails, and above all, save money. These guys are considered to be exotic animals by most vets. That means there's a premium on their care. It's often very difficult to find a vet who will treat them. So,
that's exactly what I was going to ask. So, yeah, that's a consideration.
It's absolutely a consideration, and the sad truth of the matter is most of the ferrets that you will see as pets are coming from big industrial breeders. So these guys are not breeding for healthy bloodlines. They're not tracking bloodlines. We're seeing, you know, more and more genetic problems with pet ferrets. Their lifespans here in Canada and in the U.S. are much, sadly, much shorter than the lifespans of a ferret in the U.K., or in Europe, mostly because of our breeding practices, smaller genetic pool. So you can count on them being an expensive pet to have. Hands down, 80% of them are going to develop one of three big health problems probably before they're 3 years old, and they're going to cost you money.
Wow. Do you find that, I mean, obviously, you said, and this is no surprise, that they all have individual personalities, but are they generally, like, pretty cuddly with humans? Do they bite much or that kind of thing? Or are they nice to, you know, snuggle and be close with?
Yeah, the babies, like any babies, are learning the world with their mouth.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got to be taught. When they play with each other, they can be amazingly rough, and we need to remember that, you know, their skin's a lot thicker than ours, so mm-hmm. part of socializing a younger ferret or a ferret who hasn't been handled much is beginning to teach them that we are more delicate playmates than their furry friends, but they actually they catch on very quickly. Like I will be, you know, playing with ferrets in the shelter, and they will grab a finger or a hand in their teeth, and you can actually see them, you know, making the conscious effort not to clamp down, but just to, you know, grab gently.
Right. Wow, that's amazing.
And funny thing, and I always get in trouble for saying this, but I'm convinced that the girls are the smarter of the species,
yeah.
of the ferrets. They tend to be the bosses of the group.
Yeah.
They decide how many ferrets are going to be allowed in, and despite the fact that they're physically smaller, they tend to be the dominant ones in the group. But on the flip side, if you're hoping for a lap ferret or a ferret who's going to become a cuddler, you probably want a boy. And they don't really start to get cuddly till they're sort of middle-aged and getting a little bit older, because there's just so many more interesting things to do than to sit still with you.
Right. Yeah, that's good to know. How long do they typically live, by the way?
Typical lifespan is 6 to 8 years here.
Hmm.
So if you get them past their third birthday without, you know, seeing any of the big signs of illness, then you're looking good at getting to the 8 year mark. The oldest ferret we've had in our care actually made it to 12. So she was a very unusual old lady.
So just real quick, how can our listeners help support the Ferret Rescue Society of Ottawa?
Well, if you were closer, I'd say, you know, we'd love to have some volunteers. But
mm-hmm.
We would certainly encourage people to, you know, drop by our website and learn a little bit about ferrets. We have a donation button to our PayPal account under the Help Us tab. We're on Facebook. Likewise, you know, drop by, say hello to us. We have a store there on Facebook with some ferret-related products. We ship Canada, U.S., Europe. So if you want to support us by buying some fun things for your pet there, we'd love to see you do that. And we also are affiliated with Funscript, where if you purchase gift cards and use our invitation code, they will refund a portion of that gift card to us.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us on Animal Voices today, Lisa, and sharing your insights with us.
I really appreciate the time. You have a great weekend.
You too. If you'd like to learn more about ferrets or to make a donation to the Ferret Rescue Society of Ottawa, visit ferretrescue.ca. You've been listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM, Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, unceded Coast Salish territories. Please join us here next Friday, April 6th at noon. We'll have Portland-based activist Danny Rukin on the show. We here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online. Visit our website at animalvoices.org, where you can stream past shows or download them as podcasts. You can also see our show blog there with detailed links and subscribe to us on iTunes. Stay in touch with us on Facebook.com/Animal Voices Vancouver and on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. Now we'll leave you with a song. Here's a band called The Ferrets singing Janie May. Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.
Out in a paper boat on a windy sea, happily sailing along. Sit in a corner, stand on your head and laugh. Sit in a corner, stand on your head and laugh. But in the morning, I won't be allowed to play though. 'Cause mama says, on a misty field, hastily running away, lie in the water, stand on the gates and jump. Lie in the water, stand on the gates and jump. But in the morning, I won't be allowed to play, no. Mama says I gotta grow up today. Hey.